you dress when and where? When would you and where would you? Like, how would we make it?
No, I won't project anything out there that would be
bad.
I will not stand here and self-incriminate, okay? I will give you anecdotal information for things for which the statute of limitations have now run, okay? We needed, for example, to make the point of entitlement Lakota land rights in the Black Hills in the 1868 treaty area. The arguments had been made ad nauseum. We had gone to court. We held years worth of that. Come see, come saw. We went out and took 880 acres of land and established a community on it, defended it.
Yeah.
Okay, that was one of those times. Now, we didn't go out to assassinate judges. We didn't go out to blow up the Park Service building. We went and took the land, which we selected on the basis they were going to convert it into a gravel quarry. So it made it real hard for them to require us to come in and make environmental impact statements or to demonstrate that we were in imminent danger to anything since they were going to turn it into a hole in the ground. See? Pick your time. Pick your place. Pick your mode. Don't let them dictate it. We actually were able to go into a court under the circumstances of having had armed struggle in Pine Ridge in western South Dakota for the preceding 10 years and get a federal judge to issue an injunction on the Federal Marshal Service and the FBI that they had to give us 24 hours notice before they attempt an armed eviction, which turned armed eviction into a suicidal option for them in their own mind, so they weren't about to try that. See, you got to play. You got to play. It's not just about being John Wayne going out in the street and having the high noon showdown. Okay? Force armed struggle is an absolutely vital part of the whole. It's not the only part. It's not the most important part. It's not even necessarily going to be the decisive part, but it's an absolutely necessary part.
How do we make the decision?
Well, that's
again, common sense. I can't make that decision for you.
I hear the question. Tell me, you've done a lot to expose the problem of ConTelPro, but what do you suggest that movements do actively, proactively to address ConTelPro? What's the best hope of addressing it and eliminating it?
Well, there is no best hope beyond, this doesn't do it. It gives you the basis for doing it. Once you've got the basis, then it's kind of like Hydra Head. Because there's lots of techniques and possibilities of what comes at you, and you got to sort of be savvy. Using common sense and analysis to see what it is and responding according to the situation. And there's not a single answer I can give to that other than you lay the basis by finding out what it is they've already done.
But you've already done that, and I'm wondering why all of the groups that have been targeted by ConTelPro don't have a plan of really address.
Actually, I haven't done that. I can't do that. All I can do is do what I can do to make the stuff accessible. That doesn't mean it gets internalized or people actually put it to work.
Right on.
Okay? Let me put it to you this way. Here's personal, more current anecdote. This has to do with counterintelligence. Did agents of repression, did COINTELPRO papers, did this and that and the other thing. Okay, put all that out there. People read it. Said, this is great stuff. This is really a great resource. Have the Columbus stuff happen in Denver. All of a sudden, I got people coming out of a federally funded social service programming entity in Minnesota announcing that I am an FBI agent. Why am I an FBI agent? Because I had all those documents to go in the books. And I had people who were in alliance with the American Indian Movement in Denver, Colorado, suddenly sitting down saying, I wonder if that's true. Yeah. Yo, you got to do better than that with the material.
Yeah.
You know? You have to do it. You have to do it. You all have to do it. I can't do it. All I can do is what I'm doing now.
I'm not saying that you should be doing any more than you are doing. I'm just asking if you know of any breaches that have been made between movements to address this problem collectively. because we're going to have to do it together.
No. See, what I'm saying is that the key to that is once you got the information base, then you have to engage the information, use it for purposes of analysis. You have to do better than think of the guy who put it out. It may be a federal agent because you got documents. And this in the voice of a guy who's taking $3 million a year from the federal government. I mean, duh. I got to be able to hear more than duh as a response from this. But it seems like people look at it as an ancient history lesson. Yeah, we'd like to know how to do it, but we can't apply what we just learned to present context. I think you can, but you got to work at it.
What's your opinion of the SLA in retrospect? Oh, okay. Sorry.
I think she's frustrated because I still don't think she got what she wanted, but I'm not sure I can give it to you.
Well, I'm not putting you on the spot. I'm just wondering if we as movements can do something collectively, if you've heard of anything in your travels of anything starting already to address it beyond just exposing it. And
it can't function when it's exposed.
That's
a thing. You just hit the key. That's why I say it's knowledge-based, common sense, analysis, critique. Engage what it is that's coming at you, because it's going to come at you in 100, maybe 1,000 different ways, okay?
Then we're always being defensive. I mean, when can we be...
No, you're always being conscious is what you're being. Yeah, you always got to be defensive. You're defensive when you walk across the street.
Yeah.
Okay, that's part of being alive, being out in society. Yeah, you got to be defensive, but you got to be aware there's something to defend yourself about. That's conscious.
Be neutral.
Yeah, it's part of your environment. It's part of your social environment. It's an inescapable part of your social environment. All right? Once you come to grips with that, then it's just a matter of reasoning your way through situations. You won't always end up in the right result, but you're going to end up in a right result more often if you reason through it than if you just react in a visceral sort of fashion, or more if you react something must be true because you didn't like the person they're saying about it in the first place, because you got a political disagreement, or they're a sexist dog, or they're a whatever they happen to be, just because
all that collective consciousness should come together and seek its own level like water. That's why we're here.
Yeah. It's a little harder with people than it is with water, unfortunately. do you see what I'm saying? Now, part of what happened with that was a collectivity. That was an alliance of about 50 different organizations. And it was firing on all 8 cylinders, or 16, or however many cylinders it was supposed to have. Okay? And this comes up. And it was that easy. Well, partly is because we don't always say things people like to hear. That's what I mean. Something about somebody is not necessarily true just because you don't happen to like the somebody it's said about. That's the flip side of the thing about just because, okay, you don't have to be a cop to do a cop's work. Okay? And they're not necessarily a cop just because you don't like them or disagree with them or whatever. But on the other hand, if they act like it, have your struggles, but try to have your struggles in a way that arrives at a constructive result. And think. Think. These guys in Minneapolis say they are the American Indian Movement. When was the last time you ever heard of the federal government of the United States putting $3-5 million a year into a national liberation struggle? I never heard about them funding such things.
Contras.
That wasn't a national liberation struggle.
They call it a national liberation struggle.
Yeah.
I'm with Minneapolis AIM. Where's this $5 million we're supposed to have? We don't have a dime. I mean, we're flat broke all the time. And running flat broke all the time.
Well, then you better look at the corporate reports you're getting issued, because they're claiming $3,300,000.
We're always flat broke.
Okay.
So is United Way. They get $50 million a year.
You better go back and talk to some guys there, because they got a corporate report they put out to show us how well they were doing.
We don't even have gas money most of the time.
You don't.
I never get any.
You don't.
Sure.
Let's go up in the corner and talk about that when this one's over, because I'll tell you exactly where I got that. I got the document.
Yeah, I'd like to know.
Is there any group or like working to sort of expose? I mean, really, I know your books are exposing what the FBI is doing, but is there anything like proactively working to to get rid of it versus us just having to deal with it because it's there?
You mean in terms of information stuff? Well, for starters, it's not just my books. Okay? Brian Glick put out a good little handbook called War at Home that actually has some more concrete. He gives anecdote and response kinds of stuff that you can probably use to go to your question. And it costs like $5. Okay? CCR downloads information on counterintelligence activities and cases they're involved with, which is a lot of them. Regular. Center for Constitutional Rights out of New York City. They got a webpage. I can't begin to tell you what the cyber gibberish that accesses it is, but some of you probably know about that so you can do it. But they got a webpage and they got buku information. They reproduce documents and the whole shot. There's an outfit in the Bay Area that does that as well, but I can't think of their name right off the top. I suspect there's others as well. People's Law Office in Chicago has got a whole lot, mostly archival information. I don't know they have that much current. But quite a lot of the documents that supposedly prove that Vanderwall and I were working for the FBI came from People's Law Office. Jonathan Lubell's law office is in New York City as well, but CCR is a better bet because they got the web page. Lubell has all the Freedom of Information documents on the Pratt case. They handle the Freedom of Information Act stuff for him. So they got 17,000 pages. No, excuse me, 117,000 pages.
But like, are they doing stuff to actively work to try to get rid of the agency versus just like documenting evidence and archival pages?
To get rid of the agency? You mean to get rid of the FBI?
Yeah.
Not a very fruitful task that you're taking on there.
So what, you're stuck with it until and have to respond?
Yeah, you need to learn to deal with it. I mean, if you're going to take on the FBI and go into a let's abolish the FBI kind of thing, you just moved full-time out of this line of political work into one. Let's face it, there isn't a soul in Congress doesn't want the FBI to be there. Whatever it is that they're doing, one or another individual Congress member may object to and even object to strongly, they're doing a whole lot more that serves the interest of Congress people. So you're looking at it like a multi-generational career. And that's all you're going to be doing, and you probably still won't win if that's what your target is. There's better targets. The FBI's existence is contingent on other things.
That's right.
You attack them. That's when it comes after you. You can attack the FBI all day long. They're just going to laugh at you. They're not even going to bother to repress you. Okay?
One question for you, okay? You say that we should reason through these things. Reason's a wonderful tool, but the FBI's got a bunch of toolkits that they use.
Sure.
And those tools are designed to go ahead and trick your instinct and trick your rationality as well.
Yeah.
Where do you make this cut between using our instincts that we value so much and rationalizing it away? It's like you're caught in this horrible, like, chasing your tail kind of thing. You're trying to deal with their techniques that they have.
There is no foolproof technique. So I said, you're going to arrive, no matter what you do, you will arrive at conclusions sometimes, but you'll arrive at the right conclusions more often if you sit down and work through it in an intelligent way than if you just react viscerally. Listen, we tried everything. I was not a part of the session, but when I was with Weatherman way back then, they knew they had a snitch in the Detroit Collective. They sat everybody down and they fed them blotter acid. We're going to have a little truth serum session here. Everybody with LSD, and you had one guy straight that came in from Chicago, and he did interrogations. You know who came through that best? Larry Grathwall, and he was the cop. You had people that crashed and burned. They never recovered from that. They were so traumatized, they just left. You know? The cop came through with flying colors. There are no shortcuts, and you got no recipe that's going to lead to the correct results every time. But dealing with it as something that is an operational inventory, a toolkit, people who often tip their hands, gives you a basis to begin to interact in ways. I mean, if you deal with it as a conscious part of your environment, you're lots better off than if it catches you always blinded and by surprise. And that's what happened to a lot of us a long time ago. Okay, they finally came out with a poster that said, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you, which turned out to be true. You know, nobody knew how much, you know. And every time somebody would try to say something about, hey, it looks like, everybody else would call them paranoid and go on.
You know what Willie does?
Willie gets them drunk and stoned.
I don't recommend it as a foolproof strategy.
Loose lips sink ships, and boy, can you get loose when you're drunk and stoned.
Well, actually, yeah, that's a good point, too. you took opposite direction, but yeah.
Some people don't get drunk and stoned.
Just focus on any kind of behavior. That's all you can do.
Depends on what you're involved in some ways or what you think you know about, okay? I got no moral objections to being drunk or stoned, okay? But if you're engaged in something where a wrong word can be catastrophic, well, probably not a real wise idea to do either one.
You know, I think we've already got a lot of that national and even international network in place as far as the FBI goes. When Judy and I were bombed, I had your book in the car.
It's proof that having a book won't keep this from happening to you.
However, when the FBI blamed us within 3 hours of doing it, we were informed. We knew exactly what was happening, and we knew what to do under the best of our abilities. Judy and I have a lawsuit, the estate of Judy, and I have a lawsuit to expose more. We've uncovered 14,000 pages of FBI documents. A lot of that is synthesized in her book, Timber Wars. Right. Her first journal prints out information. When Josh Wesler Cohn was attacked by FBI as well as other people in Ohio, he got in touch with people in California who knew some of the history that was going on. Organizations like you mentioned, the Center for Constitutional Rights, the ACLU, even yourself as an entity, put that information out there constantly. There doesn't have to be one megalithic body that networks everybody. The information is out there, and we absorb it as needed. One couldn't possibly, if we were just involved in doing nothing but monitoring FBI or trying to be on the defensive all the time, we wouldn't get anything else done. But through collective dispersing of information, I think we have de facto that kind of nationwide network that assists us in defending ourselves.
Yeah, we know a lot. We got the information base.
And you could abolish the FBI, and then they just create a new organization.
Sure.
Throughout thousands of years, there's been organizations to try to defeat people like us, so they ain't going to go away, at least not overnight.
Didn't you still have to deal with the Red Squads and the state police? And then, yeah. Yeah. I'm going to deal with a couple more questions here, and then I think I'm going to have to sit down and stop talking, if that's okay with you.
Can you say something about the situation of the American Indian movement now? This fractionizing among the movement and the attacks people have against each other, would you say that's one result of the former actions of the FBI, or is it something else, like the ambitions of different former leaders or prominent leaders? Gathering people behind them?
Good question.
Yeah, it is.
Which one?
It goes into creating icons in part. It goes into people who were never really prepared to be in that position, projected in a position of national celebrity and decision making. And people are fallible. People are. It has to do with an incredible amount of repression. American Indian movement got hit harder than the Black Panther Party, proportionately and otherwise. And you don't come out of that in good shape. And that creates suspicion, it creates distrust, it created situations where people had everything that they thought they believed in taken away from them, and then what do they do?
But they must be aware of what has been going on, and it is still going on. I mean, the fractionizing and attacking each other is...
There's a basis for that. There's a lot of things happening that are in the spirit of the American Indian movement to take those principles, take those ideals, and put them to work, and they're in the grassroots communities. They may call it something else. They may call it a warrior society one place. They may call it something else someplace else. But if it goes in that direction, it is the American Indian movement by any other name. There are entities that try to call themselves the American Indian movement. There's a lot of young people that would like to get involved in it. And frankly, in the last 15 years, there's not been an American Indian movement chapter started by that name anywhere in a country that hasn't come under immediate attack from something calling itself the American Indian movement. Okay? This email business may be great for communication, okay? And web pages you can get a lot of data off of and allows any bozo or any... caused a whole lot of disruption and divisiveness, but it's been very systematic with AIM. Every time you get a new chapter started up that's actually trying to do something, in fact, in a lot of cases, is doing something, it's suddenly announced from a central committee, self-appointed, that it's not the American Indian Movement, it's not incorporated, it doesn't have a chapter, and it doesn't have permission. Excuse me, we're a movement. We don't have a central committee. We don't have to get permission to stand up for our rights. But as long as people are confused about that, see.
Do you think that has any real attribute, placed on the fact that Mayor Peltier still sits in jail while everyone fights about it, as to who's in charge of getting him out?
That has something to do with it. The Peltier situation is much more complicated than that. I'm not entirely sure. I'm of the personal belief that if some errors had not been made, we could not probably have had Peltier out in the early 1980s. I'm not positive of that, but that's my inclination to believe that.
5 years.
Yeah, a lot more time and a lot more jack straws on it at this point. I'm not entirely certain, the other side of that is I'm not entirely certain if the movement had been firing on every cylinder it had available to it, he'd be out. Because he's not in prison for what they say he did anyways. In prison is a symbol of their ability to visit arbitrary repression. And in a weird way, the more you can show how arbitrary it is, the more it serves their purposes. So, I had a guy back there do that and I think shut down. I didn't hear all of the questions because somebody interjected the obvious. How many agents do you think it takes to change a light bulb?
I mean, it's been a question, you know, I've sat around and thought about. Like, okay, they want to monitor me 24 hours a day. They want to monitor this guy, 10 of us.
Oh, my God.
Now, whatever.
Monitor. How do you mean monitor? There's lots of ways. If you mean direct surveillance, then it takes a lot of man hours to do it, or woman hours, or any other hours, okay? But they can monitor you electronically 24 hours a day. They don't have to listen to do that. They do keyword searches by computer now. And if the keywords come up, then they go back and listen.
Yeah. I have an answer.
You have an answer.
There was a reporter that was focusing on a case back in Washington, D.C., wrote up something in Penthouse Magazine last year, I believe, which was reported for democracy now. There you go.
Boy, you're brave.
And I had a question. How many FBI agents are here?
The FBI have these people who are being prosecuted under surveillance for 2 years, and he learned that the method to do a full surveillance, to watch the person where they're moving, takes at least 12 units. Okay? They have it. And he learned further in his research that at any one time in these last 2 years, there are at least 200 such surveillance operations in effect.
Okay. But you're paying for it, so what are they worried about how many man hours it's going to take? See? Yeah, well, it depends a little bit on how slippery you want to be, too.
We had
a case in Minneapolis where Russ and Dennis were being tailed, surveilled, and managed to go into a department store and ended up tailing the tailors, okay, which required a whole lot more agents being assigned to get the job done. You can do that.